Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reactions to pertinent current events will help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. So let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thank you for joining me live. If you're here live on Real Liberty Media, that's awesome. I appreciate it. Or you can catch me on any podcasting platform. And if I'm not on your favorite, let me know, and I'll make sure and get on there. Wow, man, it has been such a beautiful couple days here in Western Oregon in the Pacific Northwest that I almost missed the show. Not really. I wouldn't dare. Although I did forget to do a take five last night, but that's okay. Been enjoying the weekend. The kids are away. The grandkids are away. They all went mining opals at a private opal mine down in southeastern Oregon, basically. So they're off having a good time. And Rochelle and I have been kind of kicking it here, taking care of business, enjoying the sunshine and, blue skies mostly. We have a little clouds around, a little bit of clouds around, but not a whole lot. It's mostly just been sunny and beautiful and like 70, I don't know. Fantastic weather. But let's get to it, shall we? I'm going to find all my notes, man. I'm a little bit disorganized here. Oh, so a couple kind of, housekeeping things about the show and what's going on with me. I kind of told you guys that this was going to happen. I'm going to start doing some dentistry on young people who are under general anesthesia, and that's going to start happening this week. So this week I have Wednesday off, which is cool because I do a show on Wednesday. I'll have plenty of time to prepare for that. And I start that program with the kids on Monday, and that's in Salem. So, I have a little bit longer drive, and I get to go to the semi-big city. It's not really, but it is a city. I mean, compared to anything around here, basically villages and small towns. So that's kind of cool in case I need any, any stuff. I can take care of business there in Salem. But I am kind of looking forward to that. It's exciting to be able to help those young people who otherwise just aren't getting help because, COVID, the whole COVID ridiculous bunch of restrictions has kind of set off a firestorm of, well, an extreme demand for dentistry and the supply isn't there. And I think I told you guys last week about this grant that our company got to, somehow increase the number of patients we see, which meant for us adding an additional day if I'm going to do it, and they would pay double time. So that kind of gives you an idea, the pressure that's out there to provide dental care. It's kind of crazy. It's really, it's an amazing time to be alive. I got to share with you guys something before I kind of get into the meat of stuff I have to talk about today. I've been kind of following the Clinton, exposés, the trials that are going to start, I guess have already started. And I kind of started thinking, isn't it weird? Like, I've kind of thought about the whole insurrection thing all this time is so stupid. And I was like, why are these people carrying this on? Like, it's so ridiculous. And the longer they carry it on, the more fake stuff we find out was going on. Like, how many people were planted in the group of people who was there on January 6, 2021, there was a ton of, you know, there was a bunch of people planted there to make sure that there was a riot of some sort and to make sure that people broke in and to make sure that certain things happened that, you know, these trials could take place. And now it's all starting to make sense to me and maybe others also. The reason the whole insurrection trials and hearings keep going on is because now the truth is coming out about Clinton and that whole thing. So, yeah, you know, they got to do everything they can to kind of divert attention away from, you know, all everything that's going to come out with Durham, I think his name is, the guy who's who conducted that investigation for the past several years and is finally, you know, people are going to start answering for it. You know, I really miss Grimner and his takes on things. One sec. And some of the other shows that we've had on Real Liberty Media. You know, I'm kind of the newcomer. No, I am the newcomer here. And I only caught some of the shows that were going on. And one of the things I would have loved to hear Grimner and I think Moose Girl talk about, and it's all connected. I think it was either Moose Girl or Circolo. I don't know if that's the right way to say her name, even I've never heard it pronounced. But anyway, you know, that would have been an awesome connection to make before today for me anyway. But, you know, it, circle. Okay, thank you. It just made sense to me today. It was like, okay. That's why the whole January 6th thing is going on. And, yeah. Hey, and I have kind of another thought. So, I don't know if y'all saw that Elon Musk was, you know, somebody started bringing up sexual harassment, you know, that he sexually harassed some woman. And I just laughed when I heard it. Because I was thinking, okay, we all know this is bullshit. Like, we all know this didn't happen. You can guarantee right now from the start, it did not happen. It's all fake news. Why? Because if you think back, yeah, it's so predictable. Absolutely 100% predictable. And if you think back over the last, I don't know how many years, whenever all of these kind of hyped up stories, I can't think of one that was actually true, that actually had any foundation. And by the way, do you guys miss Jen Psaki? Oh, I guess she's on MSNBC now. And I was just thinking, because, you know, the new, whatever they call it, press secretary is so freaking horrible. What a joke. But I was thinking, has anybody, I mean, I'm fairly certain nobody watches MSNBC. I don't know how they had the money to pay her, but they must have money from somewhere. You know, the mainstream media. They all get money from somewhere. Somebody's supporting them. Somebody likes them. But you can't tell from the numbers of their shows or their ratings. Certainly aren't, you know, fantastic. But, you know, I'm almost tempted. I'll just wait because some clips will come out eventually. I'm almost tempted to go watch her for a minute. But I really can't stand her. So I don't dare do it. As a matter of fact, I'll be honest with you. Oh, that was CNN. I actually, so on whatever system we have, I guess we use YouTube TV or some streaming service, I actually block CNN. So even if people come and stay here as guests, if they go looking through the channel lineup, they'll never find CNN. That's pretty funny. I've been doing that for a few years. Anyway, Okay, so let's kind of concentrate on what it is I was going to get to. I don't know. I just think that's funny. Oh, especially because Rochelle has a brother in Southern California, and he's totally 100% libbed and progressive, and you know he's just way out there. And so they come up asking where CNN is, and we tell them, well, we don't have it, when it's really just blocked. So anyway, yeah, I think that's funny. Little observation I made. You guys know in the last couple of weeks I picked up a new motorcycle, and yeah, it's a ton of fun. And I started really thinking about this because so many people are out there shopping for and buying motorcycles. And I was like, yep, there's going to be a lot more motorcycle deaths this year. And I'll tell you why. People are desperate, man, because everything is costing so much more. And hell, some people can't go to work and back, especially if they live outside of where they work. I mean, by that, I mean outside of the town they work in, which a lot of people here in Oregon travel to work and back. And it's expensive, man. Gas is adding up. You know, people are paying $100 to fill a tank that they paid $40. Oh, excuse me, before. And so they're looking for less expensive means of transportation. And yeah, motorcycles are a great idea in the summertime. You know, and in the fall and in spring, a little bit of those, you know, there's probably, I don't know, 6 to 8 months that you could really ride, and especially if you're a newbie, you wouldn't want to be riding in, you know, hellacious rain. Hell, a 75-year-old woman from Nevada lost her life the day before yesterday because a dang thunderstorm rolled in here, and she lost control of her motorcycle and hit the median because there was so much hail on the ground. And it was slippery, and she lost control and hit the median and died. That kind of sucks. But just think, she's probably had 50 years riding experience. But, and maybe not. I don't really know the facts of the case at all. But my point is, so you're going to have thousands of people getting on motorcycles who don't have a ton of experience. Now, I've ridden a motorcycle since I was 19, since the minute I left home. You know, it was one of those things. My parents said, well, you can't have a motorcycle as long as you're living here. So as soon as I didn't live there anymore, which was pretty much as soon as I could possibly leave, I've had a motorcycle and ridden motorcycles. Now, that doesn't make me a good rider by any means. And yeah, I've had my close calls, and I've had a few accidents, you know, that... you know, we're unavoidable. People don't see you. People literally don't see you on a motorcycle. I can tell you at least a handful of stories of people not seeing me. And I don't mean on just regular little bikes, which I started on, little, you know, dual sport or dirt bikes or whatever. But even on the big Harley, the Softail Heritage Classic I had, was all decked out. I had 7 lights in the front, like driving lights. 7 lights in the front. I had an air horn on it. I had loud pipes on that thing. I was going down a city street that had a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit. And there were cars parallel parked on the right. And as I was passing one of those cars that was parked, they literally looked in their side view mirror. I looked right at them, and they turned right in front of me. And I had to luckily get in the next lane to the left to avoid them. And I just couldn't believe. Every time it happens, I can't believe that they don't see me. But they don't. People are looking for big things, big objects, you know. They don't see a smaller object, and they're not looking for it, and they're not listening for it. And the new riders that are out there who have bought motorcycles so that they can, you know, afford to get to work and back, and still afford their way of living, they're going to be surprised, and they're going to get in situations that they don't know that they don't know are coming, because they don't understand how many people don't see them. I got T-boned in an intersection once. I'm telling you, it was the luckiest possible situation that could have ever happened to a motorcyclist in an intersection. It was in Juneau, Alaska. My very first bike is a 250 dual sport, like you could ride it on and off road. And I was going through an intersection. There was some snow on the ground. But in Alaska, I mean, hell, you just ride whenever, you know. If you can't ride, if it's impossible, yeah, you can't. But, you know, we were bikers, so we rode. And my light was green, and I was going through it, luckily, really slow. And luckily, the woman who came through the intersection was going really slow, too. And she hit me just hard enough. Like, I don't remember it because I got knocked out. But she hit me just hard enough that it, you know, it dumped me on my side. I had a Bellstar 120 helmet on at the time, full face helmet and all that stuff. And, you know, I probably had pretty heavy riding gear on too, like snowmobile type gear. And I just remember, this is kind of the funniest thing. I remember waking up and I was looking at some woman who was kind of crouched over me, yelling at me. And I was laid up against the curb of the street there, you know, just past the intersection, because of course the bike slid a little bit and whatever. And, you know, when I kind of woke up and realized what had happened, and the lady said that the driver didn't even stop, like, it didn't stop. So, yeah, I guess I had a little concussion from getting hit like that, but it was really lucky. You know, in a big city, she would have probably been doing 35 or 40, and I'd have been doing 35 or 40, and it probably would have really messed me up horribly. But fortunately, I just took a bang to the head, even in my helmet. And, yeah. But people, I mean, that's the thing. These new riders are just not going to see and know that other people don't see them, and they're going to assume that people see them, and there's going to be a lot more accidents, in my opinion. Even though in Oregon you have to go take an actual course where people will tell you over and over and over again that drivers don't see you, I have a feeling that a lot of these younger, inexperienced riders aren't going to hear it, and they aren't going to be prepared to take evasive action. Like, you have to constantly have an escape plan when you're in traffic, because people don't see it. It's just that simple. Yeah, so anyway, it's just a thought, you know, and I hope anybody listening who's considering getting a motorcycle, good. I mean, good. Seriously, do it. Just know that you're invisible. Like, you are invisible. Not to everybody, but it only takes one person to be invisible to, and it could cost you your life. So pay attention out there. You know, ride defensively with your head on a swivel, man. And make yourself as visible as possible. Loud pipes, lots of lights, whatever it takes. But anyway, I'm the reason I brought that up, because if you remember, I was talking about, you know, going in search of this motorcycle. And the new bikes, they're sold before they come in. So a lot of them, I mean, the popular ones. I think this is kind of interesting. This one my neighbor told me. He went out and bought one. He bought a used bike. It was smart. And because he actually got a used bike that was loaded with a ton of accessories that really make riding enjoyable. And he has a 102-mile round trip every day. And, you know, he had less efficient pickup truck that was costing him a ton of money to fill up to go back and forth to work. So he's out there riding now. And this is what he told me. He said, you know, my wife and I talked about it, and we decided I would get a bike for this much money because I needed to make sure I had all the safe riding gear I could get. And I think that that's what a lot of people are doing right now, is they're going to get a motorcycle that will get them there and back and maybe do highway speed, probably at least do highway speed. Some of those bikes won't do 75, and if there's a 70-mile-an-hour speed limit or 65, yeah, they're going to have a hard time keeping up. But, you know, I think what people are doing is spending less money on the bike and to make sure that they have enough money for all the correct safety gear that they're going to need. So at least that's a good thing. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So my neighbor and I, he was talking to me about what's a good helmet. I mean, we were kind of talking about all kinds of gear because he's a new rider. Yeah, he's a new rider. Hang on, drink time. So we were talking about all kinds of gear. And, oh, yeah, that does not sound good. Anyway, so we were talking about helmets, and he was talking about these helmets, and he was asking me if, you know, if there's a big difference between a $150 helmet and a $600 helmet, and I kind of looked at him, and I was like, dude, you're on a motorcycle. I mean, like, I don't know, like, I didn't look at all the safety data, but I'm just thinking to myself, if you hit something so hard that a $600 helmet's going to maybe save you, I'm pretty sure a $150 helmet's probably going to save you as much as you're going to be saved. You know what I mean? Like, you're on a motorcycle. There's going to be a lot of stuff effed up if you hit something so hard that you're hoping the helmet's going to save you. And I'm not downplaying helmets at all, just the cost of them. I mean, some of them are ridiculously expensive, and I don't know if they have that much more safety built into them. You know, if you get a DOT-approved helmet, which I think the DOT sticker is kind of a joke. What I mean by that, God, I shouldn't really sound so horribly negative, but yeah, I would look at I would talk to the professionals, you know, and see what they say about helmets and safety, and go with that. The DOT sticker is just a DOT sticker, I think. You know, like any other safety equipment, it's probably got some flawed methodology and whether it really is safe or not. And after a certain amount of time, they're just pumping out the helmets because they got the DOT approval, and you don't know if the quality, you know, the quality is, the consistency and the quality is actually that good or not. But anyway, a little bit of homestead stuff I wanted to talk about here just a little bit because, you know, now that we are finally outside of like some constant rain, it seems like, well, it went on until 2 days ago here in Oregon. We have been having on and off heavy rain until like 2 days ago, and now it's May 21st. Yeah, I did, Rob. That was cool. And actually, I think I did that before. Sorry, but somebody put something in chat, and I wanted to answer them for sure that I did. And I actually had done that a long time ago. I actually forgot that I had done that. And then when I kind of really started looking at it, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember doing this very thing. And I was shocked at the results. And what I'm talking about is electroculture. And I should probably talk about that sometime in a future show. But what I was getting at is, so the weather's been really rainy and crappy, like so wet that we have put off planting everything. There's some stuff planted, but we did have a lot of stuff in the greenhouse. And so Rochelle was telling me the other day, she said, I have 102 or 109 tomato plants. And I was like, really? I mean, I was kind of shocked because I don't go to every spot and kind of count things or anything. I just know there's a lot of stuff going on here all the time, like, because there's so many people who are interested in growing food. And I figure, like, you know, we're going to coordinate on some things, and the other things you're on your own. You know, if you want to grow whatever, you know, we have plenty of room, plenty of dirt tilled up, you know, lots of room for everybody to do whatever they want. So that's what we're doing. So when I heard 100 and something tomato plants, I was like, wow, you know, that's a lot of freaking tomato plants. And she said, yeah, and they're all heirloom too, which to me, I was just thinking that she purchased heirloom seeds. Oh no. These are seeds that we saved from last year. Notice I said we. No, I mean her. She saved since last year. So she saved seeds from all the different varieties of tomatoes that we planted last year, which were all heirloom tomatoes. And she dried them, and she told me how she dried them. She puts them on paper towel and leaves them in a windowsill, not in direct sunlight, but in the light. And she tests them, like she'll take a seed off of the paper towel and put it on another paper towel and kind of smush it with her thumb or finger. And if it leaves any kind of damp spot on the paper towel, she doesn't tuck them away yet. She lets them dry some more. When she can finally put them on a paper towel and it doesn't leave any kind of mark, she then cuts strips of the paper towel with seeds on it and puts that in wax paper, and then puts the folded wax paper into a Ziploc bag, and that's how she saved them until this year. And 109 seeds. I mean, I don't know how many seeds she planted, but we have 109 tomato plants, which is awesome. I mean, this is the way people used to do stuff, right? You grow food, you let some things go to seed, you save the seed, and repeat the next year. I mean, that's how, you know, societies, cultures moved across great continents, was by, one, taking a crap ton of food with them, two, figuring out what they could eat along the way, and three, making sure that some of the stuff they grew went to seed so they would have seeds for the next year. The problem is, in today's society, we have people like Monsanto, who's the big seed company? Is it Monsanto? Yeah, it's Monsanto, who GMOs everything and puts a killer gene in it. So if their genetics gets mixed with your vegetables, it'll kill your vegetable. It'll make your vegetable seed sterile. So the next year, you know, you've saved seed and you go to plant it and nothing happens. So yeah, so that is kind of cool. And I guess we have some peppers and other things that are you know, heirloom. Oh, and so I wanted to kind of mention a couple companies. Sorry, turning away from the mic. One is Territorial Seed, but I don't know that they're the best. So I'm not going to rank these in any kind of order, but I'm going to tell you about One company called Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds, and I'll see if they have a website. I'm sure they have a website. Everybody has a website, right? If they have a website, I'll put a link in the show notes. But Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds, I think these are 100% heirloom seeds in this catalog or on this site. So, you know, it's a good idea, because I don't think this is going to be over with in a year unless we're all dead, which that could very well be too. I mean, hell, they're killing us from all angles. I got some stories today. Oh my God, man, I'm telling you. You know, I'm not really a guy to incite violence, but I'm getting really close to being that guy. You know, the right people, I think, need to go. I wonder if I don't name names, if I could be arrested. Wait, could I be arrested anyway? I don't know. We're getting real close to hate speech, but it has nothing to do with, you know, race, religion, or sex, gender, none of that. But there's some people that they've got to go. That's going to be the only way. Honest to God, it's going to be the only way that we save ourselves is getting rid of some people. And I don't know how that's going to happen, but it's going to have to happen. So this other company is called HPS. I see. Oh yeah, Baker. So there's a link in the chat room. So I will make sure to put that in the show notes. But anyway, so it's a good way to ensure that you're going to have food, you know, for years to come, and you're not going to depend on whether there's going to be seed available or not. You know, going back to the, well, I guess this is all connected. That's the problem, is all of this is connected. Things are going to be more and more expensive and less available. The technicians, utilities, no, I guess it's the companies that are in charge of gas stations in Washington State, just north of Oregon here, already had to go in and rewire the gas station pump so that they could actually make room for another digit for when gas goes over $9.99 a gallon. And they're doing that in California too, and I'm sure it's just a matter of time before they do that everywhere. And then maybe we'll all be so used to paying $10 for a gallon of gas that, you know, they'll just, well, of course, once they do it, they won't go back as far as changing the pumps back, but holy cow, man. So, you know, if gas is $10 a gallon, yeah, it's going to be more expensive to buy stuff. Every single thing we buy is going to be more expensive. So if you have seed, I mean, you know, number one, you could probably sell seed for a pretty good price. And number two, you're going to have food that maybe a lot of other people aren't going to have. So that's kind of my tip of the week and how it's paid off for us. We usually buy seeds for our garden like everybody else, but you know, unbeknownst to me, we kept seeds from last year and we're growing vegetables from seeds last year. And we have a lot of stuff in the ground growing already. The onions are growing. There's sweet peas growing. The blueberries and raspberries. There's all kinds of stuff going on here. And, of course, I've talked about the chickens before. They're doing great. All three stages of chickens, well, except the meat birds, which we already harvested. But all of them are doing great. They're all healthy, happy, growing. That's just going to continue to be a thing. Maybe because I got a story to tell you that's just crazy. It is like the Matrix. I swear to God, it is like the Matrix. Okay, one of my take fives this week was about, I'm just going to move on. We're going to get to this ridiculousness in a minute. But I want to talk about a couple kind of cool things, I think. Let's see, how far down is the cool thing? Jesus. God, what did I do with it? Oh, no. I'm looking. Give me a minute for crying out loud. Okay, I'm just going to tell you this. So this is the cool story of the week. There's a kid in Idaho, maybe. I know, Moose Girl. I know. I try and spread the wealth, Moose Girl. Honest to God, if you talk to my staff, you know I take really good care of them. You know, we're trying to grow food for others also. And, of course, you guys know, well, you guys in the chat room, not everybody who listens. I'm kidding. You're always welcome to come out, you know. We can all work the garden or whatever, and hopefully there'll be plenty of food. Anyway, God dang, I don't know where in the heck that story went. Anyway, there was a 10 or 11, 12-year-old kid in, oh yeah, here it is. I found it. Gosh, oh, scared me to death. Okay, here's the story. 12-year-old angler in Idaho reels in 10-foot monster sturgeon, ties the catch-and-release state record. I love these stories, man. And there is a great picture. Okay, let me just go ahead and paste it in the... Oh, gosh. I'll paste it in the chat room so you guys can go have a look. Yeah. I hope it's not too long.
Nope,
it's not. Okay. And I will... Anyway, this is kind of cool. Look at how monstrous this fish is. It looks like, oh yeah, is he biting it on the tail? Yeah, I think he is. That's kind of funny. So that's a gigantic freaking fish, a sturgeon. They're big anyway. Well, I mean, they start small like other fish. But it's a monster fish. And I guess, you know, now it's catch and release. And before, I guess you could keep a sturgeon this size or something. But anyway, it's a big fish, and it was close to the world record or something like that. So, and especially for a 12-year-old, that's pretty cool. And that's not even the first one he caught. Earlier in the day, he caught another one that was like 7 or 8 feet, something like that. So just a feel-good story, man, for this young kid going out and catching a ginormous fish. The only problem with that is he kind of peaked early, if you know what I mean. Like now, the rest of his life, like, will he top this as far as sturgeon goes? It's almost impossible that he will top that. And, you know, maybe some other great fisher in his future, you know, that'd be cool. But that truly is like the catch of a lifetime. And, you know, he did it when he's 12. So the rest of his life, he'll just have to listen to other people catching giant fish, and he'll be talking about the one that he caught, you know. God dang, that is a big, beautiful fish. No, they're kind of ugly in a way, but they're beautiful in that they're archaic. They're ancient. They're an ancient species, you know, which is really cool. And they just keep living, man. They are sort of one tough fish. Anyway, earlier this week, I was talking a little bit about there was a woman who was walking her dog, and they got attacked by a cougar. And when you're reading the story, I mean, yeah, I feel bad for them. You know, I mean, I always feel bad for people that get attacked by wildlife. And then I kind of think, you know, but yeah, God dang, man, you could have avoided. Well, you may not be able to avoid being attacked. Like, there's instances where you get snuck up on. It's happened to me. Luckily, I never got attacked, but, you know, I've come face to face with some wild critters before. I mean, in the wild. Anyway, and then I started, like, kind of, you know, taking apart this story in my mind and rereading it. And here's the deal, man. I'm not giving orders. I hope everybody knows. I'm just offering my best advice, basically. And it's worth what you pay for it, so it's free. So take it with a grain of salt. But man, when you go walking, you know, off, you know, in the wild, let's say, in the wilderness, you go walking on a trail with your dog, you're basically walking into territory where there's going to be wild animals. And there's always, like, wild animals. There's coyotes, there's fox, there's wolves, there's cougars, there's bobcats, there's coons and possum, skunks. I mean, there's all kinds of critters that can attack you in one way or another, or just by getting within their space, you're going to get attacked by, you know, like a skunk will spray or whatever. But a cougar, man, especially this one, they said looked emaciated. And it attacked her first. And then her dog came back to protect her. And then it attacked the dog. And, of course, it had the dog by the head, kind of bit the dog's skull and bit it hard enough to fracture its skull in two places and puncture a sinus and injured its eye. And anyway, so this woman actually had to run back to her car
And she flagged down another person who happened to be a woman and who happened to have some spray, like bear spray or whatever, and went back there. And on the way, one of them picked up a stick, and then they found a piece of PVC pipe, and they went and sprayed the cougar, and they were beating the cougar to make it let go of the dog. And they finally freed the dog, and the cougar left. And they took the dog to the hospital, and you know, luckily the dog's going to be okay. The human's going to be okay. But here's my point, man. Like, let me give you a couple examples of things that I think you should consider carrying with you when you go on the trail. Number one, a gun. Always. There's some very small guns you can carry concealed or open. And get quick access to, and you don't have to shoot anything. You can just fire it in the air, and it'll probably scare whatever away. But short of that, always a knife. And now they have these great knives. One I like to have on me when I'm hiking, it's a neck knife. And actually, it hangs handle down, so the blade is actually pointing toward your throat, which actually, I know, it sounds horrible. And it could be, but it's in a sheath that's really hard plastic, and there's a very solid snap when you push that blade in the sheath, so the knife isn't going to fall out, right? You understand what I'm saying? So it's hanging from your neck, handle down, and it's kind of friction retained in the sheath. And when you grab it, I mean, it's right there on your chest. You know, if somebody even came up behind you and grabbed you, you could get your hand to your knife and pull that knife out and start stabbing them. Same with a cougar. I mean, you could have, if you were that close and a cougar was that pissed, I mean, yeah, you're going to have to start stabbing it to get it off of you. A walking stick. There's tactical walking sticks now. I have two of them myself. And you can add segments to them if you want them a little taller. Like if you're really tall, you can add a segment. Like mine are 5 segments, I think 1 foot each, something like that. Yeah, that's probably right. And then each segment can have, it's hard to explain. If you unscrew the segments, there's an end that has some kind of a mount. So like if you wanted to put a knife blade on one, you could. If you wanted to have a saw blade on one, you could. If you wanted to have a harpoon on one, you could. Anyway, but when they're assembled, now this is not a walking stick I would say you would want to take on a 2,000-mile hiking trip because it's heavy. It's not like a lightweight piece of garbage. It's heavy. And but it's also a weapon. I mean, it is a full-fledged weapon. Like, you could kill anything with this freaking, well, maybe not a couple things. Like, a Cape Buffalo, you probably wouldn't be able to kill. if you're in Africa, don't go after a Cape Buffalo with it. No, but it's a heavy-duty, you know, metal walking stick that, you know, anybody seeing you walking with it would be like, oh, that's a cool walking stick. Not knowing that you have like 5 weapons in that thing. Not that you could get them out that quickly, but the walking stick itself, you know, you could swing. If you swung that at that cougar and hit that cougar would have probably broken something. You definitely would have hurt it bad enough to scare it off. Anyway, so like neck knife, tactical walking stick, even just a regular walking stick that, you know, that's kind of a little bit beefy or, you know, professionally carved and finished. They usually hold up pretty well. And, you know, you could, I mean, this woman didn't have anything. She didn't have spray. She didn't have a gun. She didn't have a knife. She didn't have a stick. Her dog wasn't on a leash, which I don't know if that would have made a difference or not. I mean, I'm not saying it should have been or not. But there, you know, so much damage, I think, could have been avoided just by being prepared. And you know, clearly people go in the woods all the time and they're not prepared. And you know why? Because these things don't happen very often. I mean, they're really rare instances when people get attacked by, you know, wild animals. When I first started the show, right before I started the show, Moose Girl had posted that a bear broke into a couple's home and attacked the husband and wife, like in their bed, for crying out loud, or in their bedroom. Oh my God, that would have been terrifying. That would have been terrifying. We have lots of weapons in the bedroom, so I'm going to put a sign out for the bears, you know, be prepared. Danger. Oh my God, he had to shoot the bear. Oh my gosh. Well, yeah. Well, good. At least he had a gun and could do it and didn't hit his wife, I hope. But, man, when you go out and go off trail, take something. Oh, I hate it when people are victims that they don't have to be victims. And the dog, too. I mean, that's kind of sad. I have these dogs in Montana because, of course, there's grizzly bears in Montana. And we had these two dogs. One was this little yippy mix, and the other one was a golden retriever mix. And, you know, we were like, yeah, you know, we have these dogs, so if a bear comes, you know, they'll fend it off. And I was on the Northern Cheyenne Indian Reservation at the time, and one of my friends was a native, and he was kind of laughing at me. He goes, "Hey, Doc," he goes, "yeah, those dogs aren't going to protect you." He says, "They're just going to be looking over their shoulder as they're running past you back to the car." Like, they're going to leave you in the dust. And you're going to be left to fend for yourself against the bear. Which, I mean, that makes sense. It does make sense. I don't know if the dogs would have done anything other than bark. I mean, I've seen dogs, you know, kind of go after bears and scare bears off. Mostly they don't want to have any encounter with you. But, I mean, Grizz might be a little different. I don't know. I got to drink something. Oh, that's good. All right. Listen, I want to talk to you about avian flu for just a minute. Just because of some crazy stuff I saw. Wait a minute. Okay, so I was looking, I was, you know, you're starting to hear more and more of these avian flu outbreaks. And somebody posted a question to the local news reporter person, like, "Hey, can your dogs get avian flu?" And of course, the reporter, being totally clueless about what's going on in the world today, because they basically read whatever's put in front of them, and I don't think they actually go out and look for any information or truth themselves. They're, you know, they, you know, brought on some other supposed expert who also didn't know what the hell they were talking about, and they were like, "Oh no, your dogs are completely safe from getting avian flu." And I'm thinking to myself, man, you are an idiot. Like, number one, for, you know, and trying to answer this question, and number two, finding an expert who actually doesn't know what's going on in the world either, and number three, you know, for trying to answer the question yourself and make us all smarter, you have done none of those things. So here's what I found out and why I thought it was interesting and maybe I would share it, because it really, and I actually kind of covered a little bit of this a couple weeks ago about avian flu, because a fox in Japan got avian flu and some other animal got avian flu that was not a bird. And I mean, avian means bird, so, you know, it should be a bird flu, but no, it's not. But in 2000, got to bring this up, just hang with me a sec. We got a few minutes, we're going to get through this. No, that's not it. Let me me just read some of this stuff. Oh, yeah, because number one, this kind of, it kind of came closer to home here in the Willamette Valley. Now, I live in Yamhill Valley, which is actually a little spur valley off of Willamette Valley. But Willamette Valley is the main valley that runs north and south from Portland to basically Cottage Grove or Eugene. You could roughly cut it off of Eugene, Oregon. It's a gigantic valley in Oregon. I mean, everybody talks about Willamette Valley, the Willamette River, you know, so it's a big valley. But anyway, so avian flu has been found in the Willamette Valley. Now, maybe a month ago or so, I talked about how avian flu had been found in Idaho, in two different places in Idaho. And, of course, they kill all the birds, the flocks that are infected, and you know, it's a horrible thing. Well, now it's right here in the Willamette Valley, which is, you know, basically my valley connects to Willamette Valley. So I'm like, okay, let's go kind of find out what is going on here, especially having come out of COVID and knowing about gain-of-function research, what has gone on with avian flu. And this is what I found. So I found this story. Yeah. So I found this story, and of course, you don't have to look hard to find this stuff, but you have to look. And the story I found was from, it's called science.org, and it was a report of gain-of-function research, period, like in general. But this particular story says controversial experiments that could make bird flu more risky, poised to resume. In other words, this article was printed in 2019. And there was some research going on 4 years before they printed this article that was actually taking avian flu viruses and manipulating them, of course, for the betterment of people, so that we would know how to better react to pandemics and epidemics. So they were doing research with the avian flu virus to make it, number one, like more able to attach to mammalian respiratory tissue. Where have we heard that before? Well, we heard it with, you know, COVID. Exact same thing. Number one, make the virus more able to attach and attack mammalian respiratory tissue. And then, kind of once you've done that, then you can kind of bring it to, you know, humans, which are also mammals, I know. But, you know, get it introduced into humans. So when I was saying earlier, kind of at the beginning of the show, that, you know, I don't think this is going to be over within a year, when I was talking about saving seeds and, you know, being prepared to go the distance, so save seeds from this year for next year, you know, and how that's all going to work. And I said, you know, I don't think it's all going to be over this year unless we're all dead because they're killing us coming and going. Like, you know, the whole Roe v. Wade thing and the whole, you know, pandemic thing. And they have more planned, I'm sure. And here, all of a sudden, we're starting to see, you know, mammals getting infected with avian flu. Now, of course, 100%, they're going to start talking about how this virus is a natural, you know, mutation that made this virus, you know, able to infect mammalian respiratory tissue. But what I found out, looking at some research, the guy who works at the University of Tokyo and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, his name is Yoshihiro Kawaoka, is the exact same guy who the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation paid to make viruses to do gain-of-function research with viruses. So this is, you know, kind of rinse and repeat, here we go again. And you don't think that, you don't think that this is, if you think this is coincidence, that all of a sudden, you know, we're starting to come out of the whole COVID pandemic, and now avian flu is starting to show up, not only in, just think about this. So how many millions of people, okay, let's say thousands, let's be realistic and say thousands of people have decided to get backyard birds so that they could at least have some eggs and maybe some chicken, you know, when the crap hits the fan and there's no food to be had. And of course, you know, the evil bastards were thinking about this and thinking, oh, you know, probably people are going to get chickens and try and have their own eggs. So the next phase is we better make sure some avian flu gets spread to take out all of those birds. And you know what's crazy about this? Is the avian flu actually doesn't harm wild birds. It actually doesn't do... I mean, maybe there was a time when it did, and yeah, there's probably varieties out there that cause wild birds to get sick and die. But really, now the gain of function is to specifically target these domestic birds. Turkeys, chickens, probably ducks. So... yeah, moose girl. I know that there are some that do, but I'm specifically thinking that these gain of function ones. I mean, so think about it. So if that avian flu was spread by wild birds, wouldn't we be finding, you know, these wild birds dead laying around everywhere? And yeah, I've seen some reports where a whole flock of bird dies suddenly and drops to the ground. I don't believe it. I think something else happened there. But my point is, if you follow the kind of progression from COVID to now knowing that, you know, the economy is horrible, they tried to ruin all these businesses with the lockdown. They shut out so many people, ruined some businesses, and now, you know, there's going to be a food shortage. Gas is expensive. People want to start taking care of themselves by growing their own food and having their own birds and eggs, and that, so the next thing to come along is the avian flu that's been gain-of-function adapted to attack domestic flocks. And especially that this guy's name came up again. I mean, it kind of surprised me, but then again, it didn't really surprise me. The same guy, obviously, he's a genius. He's real smart manipulating viruses, but he's an evil bastard because... I mean, they're basically, like I said, they're killing us coming and going, and they're trying to stay one step ahead, like, you know, to take out the domestic, the domestic birds. It's just, it's terrible. You know, people are trying to do the right thing and plant some gardens. I mean, what's going to be next? That's what I'm worried about. How are they going to take away the vegetables? And I know that they want us to eat vegetables, so maybe... the thing is, they just don't want so many of us around eating vegetables. So however they could get rid of us, I'm sure it'll be some E. coli or salmonella or something that gets in, you know, your home garden and mysteriously takes over and everybody gets sick and dies from that. Oh, anyway, gosh, there was so much more to talk about. Always so much more to talk about. I really do enjoy doing this. I thank you guys for joining me. I really appreciate it. If you can, go over and catch some of those Take Fives on Rumble or BitChute or Odyssey. And you can always catch me Wednesday and Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. And I will see you guys, I don't know. I'll see you probably tomorrow with Hal Anthony's show and in the chat room there. Thanks, you guys. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platform. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.